This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
And with that, welcome to the Closing Market Report for November the 11th, 2005, Veterans Day. I'm Jay Pierce. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Later in the half hour, the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. Agricultural news, Ag Secretary Mike Johanns didn't make it to the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention to hold his final Farm Bill listening session today. He's busy trying to save the Doha round of the World Trade Organization talks, among other things. Todd Gleason is in Kansas City, where this morning he took up the WTO with one of the men on the negotiating team that's been in Geneva hammering out the World Trade Agreement, and we'll hear his report. It's all ahead on this afternoon's Veterans Day edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Well, we saw a lot of green on the screens today. December wheat closing up 1 3/4 at 311.5. March up 2 1/4 at 328.25. December corn up 1 3/4. March up 1 3/4. The May corn up 1.5. December up 1.5. In the soybean pit, the big gains. November up 16 cents to 593. January up 14 to 601.5. March up 12 3/4 to 606 3/4. And November closing up 11.25 points. Soybean meal for December up 620. The December price down 3. Feeder cattle for November down 15 at 115.05. December live cattle closed down 155 at 90.42.5. December lean hogs closed up 30. And the pork bellies for February closed down 145. And waiting patiently on the line, Mike Zuzulo joins us now from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, Lafayette, Indiana. Thanks, Mike, for sitting by while we brought you that news update on the NCAA opinion.
Oh, I'm an old dog at this because I came from Miami University where it was the Redskins, and now it's the Red Hawks. So I had to go to the bookstore after graduation and buy all their cheap stuff that said Redskins on it. So that's why we wear all that clothing like we do over here in Lafayette when you see me around town, Jay.
And a bulldog chasing you.
That's exactly right.
Well, let's take a look at how the markets were doing today. As I mentioned, in the Board of Trade pits, a lot of green on the screen today, especially in that soybean pit.
Yeah, you know, there were several factors today moving the trade. First, you know, rumors of China buying up to 10 cargoes. Even at one point, we had seen maybe even 12 cargoes of U.S. beans, but only saw that once. So let's say it's 10, and, you know, you got to ask yourself, if you're a trader, with all this past 3 weeks' news, why would you be buying, you know, if you were the Chinese, if you were so worried about bird flu, and bird flu was so bad, and then we got a news story this morning saying that the Chinese were looking at exporting corn and putting more on the export market by lowering their prices, you know, in China to places like South Korea, exactly because of bird flu. And we would guess that it's President Bush's visit next week. We would guess that the president, and we've seen this in several pieces of copy on news wires and in financial publications, that the president is probably going to push and make a loud clanging noise on the Chinese revaluation, given the deficit we're carrying and the surplus the Chinese are carrying. So that was probably the biggest thing that hit the beans today. But there's also expectations for a big NOPA crush on Monday. Technical buying really kicked into a better gear from what we could see when the Dease meal broke above that 179.50 level we talked about this morning. And there was also some strong stopping of November deliveries before the opening. So he had about five good reasons to be long versus short and pretty much put the report on the back burner for right now.
What about in the others? No big spectacular gains or losses. Are we quieted down from yesterday's report and into a more seasonal trend here?
Yeah, you know, the corn probably is the best one to view as far as the technicals go. The December corn closed steady on the week. You know, it suggests to us that the 2.3 and change carryover that the USDA gave us, the trade was satisfied with and was, you know, pretty much expecting that. We We also saw the December corn close right on its 10-day moving average of 195.5. So you can't call the corn close anything but neutral. When it comes to wheat, we were a little bit surprised there. The news wires, and we'd buy into this, the news wires were saying that there was some Chicago, Kansas City spreading, buying Chicago, selling Kansas City, but that's a little surprising to us given that the hard red exports are better right now and the stocks are tighter on the hard wheat, and the hard red winter growing areas are turning a lot drier in the last week and a half with some warmer weather, and the latest forecasts show, you know, very little rain for the next week. So a little bit surprised by the fact that they were selling Kansas City, which is the hard red winter, and buying the soft red in the Chicago. So we'll see if that doesn't unwind on Monday. And we've got the crop conditions report, which have been, I think, around 20% below what they were in good to excellent versus last year.
Take a quick look at livestock.
Well, we saw a big change in the cattle mindset. Talked to the floor and a good contact up there. There was both commercial selling reported and fund selling reported. That was from the opening, and it just built upon itself with these fat cattle closing down around near their lows. Feeders also softened up, and that might be because the corn did find some support. So something to watch about, something we talked about last week on the air. Hogs felt a fairly good day. Bellies were down, but the hogs stayed in a pretty good range, settling up 30 to 50.
All right. Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap it up today?
We want to watch that crude oil market next week, Jay. We saw that the December crude hit its 200-day moving average this week, fell below it. Looks like it's going to close below it. That opens up the downside, maybe another $3, and that's where some major weekly support comes into play. So we've really got that on the radar scope for next week.
All right. December crude right now down 25 at 57.55. Mike Zuzulo, thank you much. Have a great weekend.
You too, Jay. Thanks for having us on.
All righty. Thank you very much. And we check in with Mike Zuzulo at Risk Management Commodities Fridays in the closing market report and, of course, when we do the opens in the morning as well. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll be taking a look at agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg. AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Clear skies, lows ranging from 37 in northeastern Indiana to 47 in southwestern Illinois. For tomorrow in Illinois and northwestern Indiana, increasing cloudiness, scattered showers arriving in northern and western Illinois during the afternoon. In eastern and southern Indiana, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 62 in northern Illinois to 72 degrees in the far south. And now a quick look at some agricultural news. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns was originally scheduled to host his last Farm Bill Forum during the National Association of Farm Broadcasters annual convention in Kansas City today. But in a last-ditch effort to save the Doha round of the World Trade Organization talks, Johanns headed to Geneva and West Africa with U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman instead. He did address the NAFB members via audio link yesterday and told them that during his listening sessions, he heard nothing but positive comments from ag producers about efforts to increase U.S. USDA's rural development efforts. Johanns said that there was also overwhelming support for USDA conservation programs, but when it comes to subsidies, he said producer reaction has been mixed. He said some states made it clear that they wanted more of the same for the next farm bill, but he said those were states with a lot of program crops. In states with specialty crops, Johanns said the message was different, and that will complicate putting together the next farm bill. And that's in part why he said he would not support an extension of the current farm bill, even if there's no agreement on liberalizing ag trade in Hong Kong next month. Johanns and Portman also announced today the launch of the West Africa Cotton Improvement Program. That's an initiative aimed at improving the cotton sectors of six West African nations. And as I told you, Todd Gleason is in Kansas City at the Farm Broadcasters Convention.
I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Well, the WTO negotiations continue in Geneva, focusing primarily on agricultural issues and in particular the reduction or elimination of trade-distorting subsidies. Now, the most familiar of these to Midwestern farmers are the LDPs, or loan deficiency payments. The director of the multilateral negotiations for USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service, Greg Young, has been actively involved in this current round of the negotiations, often called the Doha Round. He joins us now. Mr. Young, some have said the trade-distorting programs reinstated in the 2002 Farm Bill have made it very difficult for the U.S. to sit down at a good-faith negotiating table. Has that legislation hampered the U.S. negotiating position in Geneva?
Well, I think as Ambassador Johnson has indicated on several occasions, what you have to have is a thick skin. And what the 2002 Farm Bill did is it gave great media bites to our the other countries, particularly the European Union, but also the developing countries by and large. I mean, we were very isolated at that point. And up until recently have remained isolated because people felt that we were going the wrong direction, in our, particularly in our domestic support. And this is why it was so critical for the United States to come up with a proposal that we did on October 10th to show that we were serious, that we would look at something that would systematically bring down and level the playing field, not only in the domestic support side, but most importantly address the market access opening elements that we need. And so, yes, it gave a great media bite, but what has been able now, we've been able to shift that and really put the pressure back where it belongs and where it resides mostly is with the European Union, because in effect, they have done two reforms. They did the Global 2000 reform in 1999, and they've done the 2003 midterm review. But when you look more concretely, all they did was looking at their domestic support and tinkering or trying to bring down their domestic support. But the all-important market access has not been touched in the European communities. This is important. It sets the tone for where we're going to go in the negotiations.
There are many that will question, why is it that we need market access to a stagnant economy in the European Union? What benefit might there be for the United States to talk about market access to the European Union when, in fact, the economies of the world that are growing are India, China, Brazil?
Well, the fact of the matter is that we have a situation where the developing countries are not going to move until the developed countries move. The developing countries are asking for special differential treatment, which we and others have not outlined very specifically, because we say, and rightfully so, that we want to address the core concerns. We want to get the core modalities, as we call them, established first, and then we can talk about the special and differential treatment. Well, the core modality is market access, and the core modality has to be established first for developed countries. And only when we've done that can we then turn to what we're going to work on for developing countries. And that's why it's so important that we keep the ambition at a very high level for countries like the European Union, who are less than enamored with opening up their market.
Ambassador Johnson, speaking to the National Association of Farm Broadcasters on this Friday morning, reminded us that Trade Promotion Authority, the TPA, is an important aspect of the WTO negotiations. That's the authority that allows the president to approve a trade agreement like the WTO without actually getting first approval from Congress. Does that deadline, which comes in 2007, make a big difference in the way the timeline works for this set of negotiations?
All of the other members are very cognizant of that in Geneva. And the bottom line is that we need about a minimum of 9 months from the time that we have established the final modalities of what we're going to do and how we're going to do it to actually translate that into the necessary paperwork. That paperwork is establishing the individual schedules for every country and reviewing it, verifying it, making sure that no cheating is going on. And that's exactly why we need to get this done early to allow for proper verification and hornswoggling when necessary.
Many on the Hill say she's dead, it's done, the WTO is over. You don't apparently believe that.
No, these are like cats that have nine lives, and we're not there yet in terms of extinguishing the lives. We've got opportunities yet. It's a process. It's a confidence building. It's a push forward, a push backwards. But I'm confident that we'll get there, because we're doing the right thing, and this is going to benefit U.S. farmers if we do it right. and it's going to benefit the world economy. And this is very important. I think the American population also has a great amount of empathy for the world as a whole and does not like to see 800 million people starving or in hunger every day. And this is the core issue which we're about. We're trying to raise the entire wealth of the world, and we want our American farmers to participate in that.
If the negotiations are successful in terms of the agreement, or not the agreement, but the proposal that was made by the administration that would eliminate, for instance, things like loan deficiency payments or the LDP, what types of investments might Congress look at that would fit into that proposal? What sorts of things might producers expect Congress to come back with to fit into the new farm bill then?
Well, I think Congress has a wide variety of tools that they can look at in a number of issues, be it starting from conservation and across the board into our whole phytosanitary regime, investment in areas of research, transportation, other areas. So there's a wide area of opportunities for us to look at. I guess the point here is what the trade negotiations are trying to do is just simply recognize the economic reality that market price support has been the transfer of income that the government is providing to farmers is the least under our market price support system. And that as we move to direct payments or other systems, the farmer gets more the value out of that in that transfer process. And that's the economic benefit. And then the other option is how do we establish the more active and vibrant rural economy to go along with the farm sector.
Mr. Young, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Greg Young is with the FAS USDA. I'm Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
And joining us now on the telephone for a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostert of FCC Futures in Williamsville Farmers, Williamsville Farmers Co-op, I should say, in Williamsville, Illinois. And good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, we've had a day of padding, I guess, or a day to digest all the reaction and the aftermath of yesterday's crop production report, and things look like they've had, well, at least on some of the commodities, a more seasonable approach to things. Soybeans way up today.
Beans kind of had an impressive performance with trading down 9 cents yesterday and staging a nice rally, and then some follow-through on that today. Kind of want to make you think that maybe we're putting a base in on things. Cash-wise, we're just not seeing anything moving for cash grain, and basis has been improving in response to that. And I think you sort of seeing some carryover into the futures market on that. Some good stoppers showed up in the November options, too.
Yeah. Do you see anything on the horizon in the, well, next week, for instance, after we get through this weekend, that's going to be something that might be of a reactionary nature?
Tell you what, this period between now and the end of the year traditionally is a slow news doldrum period in the grain markets. Opportunity-wise, I think we'll be looking to see if we can see some basis improvement. Might be an opportunity for some basis sales just because we're in that window where the producer has the crop put away, nothing is happening, but we're seeing some processor demand, so we could see something there happening in there. And our eyes are going to turn south, watching the Brazilian and Argentine crop and see how it goes in.
Mm-hmm. What kind of prices are you looking at your place today?
We're at 22 under the Dease or 173 on nearby corn, and beans at 578, and they're still showing a 5 cent inverse from Dease to January.
Mm-hmm.
Or for November Dease. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Month ahead. Well, that's okay. As you said, news gets a little bit slow, so we look ahead for some excitement. Anything else you want to touch on today, Bruce?
A little bit of basis improvement on the river this week. A couple cents on corn over the past week, 9 cents on beans. Barge freight has backed off some for the week. It's about 10-15% higher than the low, but Tell you what, freight is still tight enough that any type of program that gets done, it runs barge freight up on itself. So it's still not straightened out there.
All right. Bruce, thank you very much. You have a good weekend.
Thank you.
All righty. That's Bruce Bostert at FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Just a couple of minutes, we'll be taking a look at the agricultural weather. Steve Hilberg will check in. And stay tuned. Your local newscast is coming up next.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
It's coming up on 2:30 Central Time, and here with a report of AM 580 News is Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. The NCAA has ruled that the University of Illinois will remain on the list of universities that use what the organization calls hostile or abusive mascots. But in the same ruling issued this afternoon, the NCAA mentioned that the names Illini and Fighting Illini are not a reason why the U of I remains on the list. NCAA Vice President Bernard Franklin says the U of I's appeal of its inclusion on the list of schools facing penalties for Native American mascots and logos has been denied. He says the appeal offered no new evidence in support of Chief Illiniwek and the stylized Indian head logo. But Franklin says the name Illini is closely associated with the state of Illinois' name, and the names Illini and Fighting Illini should not be considered offensive as long as the U of I mounts an educational campaign to make sure the name is not directly related to Native Americans. The U of I can appeal the ruling. The partnership between automaker Daimler Chrysler and Japan's Mitsubishi Motors is over. Daimler Chrysler today sold its 12.4% stake in the company to Goldman Sachs for an undisclosed price. Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant in the McLean County city of Normal was originally built as a Mitsubishi Chrysler joint venture. The Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington plans to add an on-site fire and rescue station. The city of Bloomington will operate the $6.4 million facility, with construction expected to start in 2 years. The Federal Aviation Administration will pay most of the cost. News of the airport fire station follows Wednesday's fatal plane crash in East Bloomington. Indiana's unemployment rate dipped in September, but the state continues to trail the nation. The Indiana Department of Workforce Development says nearly 170,000 Hoosiers were out of work in September, putting the state's preliminary jobless rate at 4.9%. Veterans Day observances today included the dedication of a new memorial wall in Chicago listing Illinois veterans who died in Vietnam. Governor Blagojevich attended another ceremony in Chicago today with Hispanic veterans. In Indianapolis, F-16s flew over the war memorial while a band played the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Among the ceremonies in East Central Illinois, veterans and their families gathered at East Lawn Cemetery in Urbana this morning for a memorial service. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Jay Pierce. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580 and WILL.UIUC.EDU. Up next, our daily look at agricultural weather. Steve Hilberg away today, but he did leave us his outlook.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Mild weather persisted over Illinois and the Midwest this week. Temperatures continued to average well above normal for this time of year. High temperatures the first half of the week reached into the 70s before a cold front knocked temperatures back to a more seasonable range beginning Wednesday afternoon. At this time in November, normal high temperatures range from the mid to upper 40s in northern Illinois to the mid-50s central and to the upper 50s across southern Illinois. The only rain in the past week is what came in last weekend's thunderstorms, but that rainfall was fairly substantial. Most areas in Illinois have had near-normal precipitation at this point in November. The cold front on Wednesday, although initially holding promise for more rain, came through most of Illinois dry. It appears next week could be an active week in Illinois, with cold fronts swinging through the state Tuesday and then again on Friday. There will be brief warm-ups prior to each frontal passage, but in general it looks like temperatures will be near normal much of the week. The system late next week may bring in much colder weather for the weekend, however. Both systems should be accompanied by some rain as they move through, with the best bet for northern Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. I'm Jay Pierce. Remember, join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week with Todd Gleason. He'll be doing the hosting from out of the Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City this time. our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Commodity Week tomorrow morning at 11:30. For agricultural news anytime, check out our website, wyll.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then agriculture, and you're there. Thanks for listening.